Welcome one and all once again to Dual Worlds in episode 146. We come to you this very, very, very quiet week. There really wasn't a ton of news or anything to talk about. On the bright side, there are a lot of games coming out on the digital front for most of these companies, so we have all of that to talk about. Joining me this week, we have Daniel.
Hi.
And we have Martin.
Hello.
So, yes, like I said, it's been a really quiet week for news, so we're going to kick it off with what we've been playing. And I am going to be partially selfish and continue on with Pushmo World a bit. Just because I've opened up more of the puzzles and stuff like that, and I got up to the Nintendo murals now, which is kind of awesome. It's actually kind of interesting because they've had Nintendo murals in the original, and some of these are pretty much the same design, because, you know, like, there's only so many ways you can make Mario and then look different. But it's interesting because it's like the same puzzle designs, but it's a different puzzle because of the elements they added. So it's kind of interesting to kind of compare the two and see the differences between, like, oh, this is how they had you solve it in the original Pushmo, and this is how you solve it in the Pushmo world. The other good thing with the Nintendo mural puzzles are the fact that this one has a bit more fan service. Like, it has, like, a remixed Mario theme, and when you solve it, it plays, like, the fanfare theme from the goalpost at the end of the original Super Mario Brothers, which is a really nice touch. So it has, like, that Nintendo touch to it when you do certain stuff with this. But yes, it continues to be a really fun game, and if you have a Wii U or if you have a 3DS, I recommend Pushmo. Like I said, it's one of the freshest and most interesting puzzle games I've played in recent memory. And they get a lot of mileage out of a simple push and pull mechanic. So yes, Martin, what have you been playing?
I played some Sniper Elite 3.
Did you shoot people in the nuts?
Not yet. I usually go for the head.
Yeah, it was kind of, it's weird because somebody posted like a vine of them shooting somebody in the nuts in the game, and people were kind of weirded out by that, but I'm like, we have no problem with headshots, but somebody getting shot in the nuts, we kind of groan at.
Yeah, I don't know. I like the second one, so I bought the third one because it looked fun again. And it's actually quite a bit better than the second one, because they kind of eliminated the worst part about the second game, which was that it's, since it was focused on, like, the European war, and it mostly was based in, like, cities, so the gameplay was quite linear, and you were kind of forced into specific positions to actually snipe. And what they do with this game is they set it in Africa, and the level design is quite open. Often they give you, like, multiple objectives which you can do in which order you want to do them and stuff like that. So you can actually now tackle all these scenarios in interesting ways. And they even introduce this ghosting mechanic of you can, because sniper rifle is not actually silenced, so you can make one shot from any point and the enemy is aware of you but doesn't know yet where you actually are. So then you can reposition yourself and shoot again, and the enemy would still not know where you are. So it's kind of interesting to do it that way. They also way more in these scenarios ways to actually mask your shots as well. So, for example, there can be generators for lights or something. You can sabotage them, and then they make noise. And then, if you're near that noise, you can basically mask your shots while you're there. So, enemies wouldn't even know that someone shot. except maybe if they find, of course, the corpse of the guy you eliminated. And yeah, it's actually really fun, and I think because of the open design of the levels, quite a bit better than the second one even. And What did I want to say? Oh, right. I also got the bonus mission in which you apparently have to assassinate Hitler.
Isn't that always the way?
And I thought it was quite funny because even the main character makes a reference to that, because when you start a mission, he says that he has feeling of deja vu. And once you actually kill him, they kind of even go that way of making sure, hey, maybe it wasn't really him, maybe it was a body double or something like that. So if they ever make Sniper Elite 4, they probably will have another mission in which you have to assassinate Hitler.
It seems like a random question, but do you know who Charlie Brooker is?
I have no idea.
Okay, don't worry about it then. It's a guy, he pops up on TV in this country every now and again, and he's a journalist as well, and he basically is, in that one mission, he's one of the guards that's with Hitler most of the time, because he likes the idea of somebody shooting him in the balls, which is quite cool. I mean, if there's ever a reason to be in a sniping game, then I guess that is a reason to be in the game.
Okay.
Actually, it sounds like they've actually, because what I hated about Sniper Elite V2 was, because of how linear it was, it felt like I was being forced into medium combat range situations, and I really hated that, so it's nice to see that they fixed that.
Yeah, I basically, most missions, because I try to be real stealthy, I kind of don't even use the machine guns. All I use is basically my sniper rifle and the silenced gun in close quarters, but otherwise I only use the machine gun if I really fuck up.
Yeah.
So and that's actually great. I mean, if you're playing a game that's called Sniper Elite 3, that's
you
want to
be
sniping. What you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I was going to ask how the reload mechanics work, because snipers are always an interesting weapon to use, and like what? Standard shooters.
What do you mean?
But
reload.
Because snipers in general don't hold a ton of ammo. So I don't know if it's like an actual game, you know, like how very few games actually give you like an actual ammo count that you have to stay true to. So I didn't know if that game did it or if it's just like, yeah, you have enough sniper ammo for whatever.
If it's like the second one, then there'll just be snipers dotted around the map that you can pick up.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
There's more than enough ammo on the map, except if you use that ammo and actually shoot at it, so there's also always a possibility to create a distraction or actually kill someone if you're standing right next to it.
Oh, okay, that's different.
Yeah, they are using stuff like that in interesting ways. Also, scenarios in which you have to, for example, those are mostly optional objectives, like destroying AA guns, but it's interesting how you can tackle that. You can basically, I don't know, try to snipe those guys manning those cannons and then plant dynamite to it, or maybe you were able to kill a guy with a Panzerschreck weapon, and then you use a Panzerschreck to just blow it up, or you try to get close enough so you can actually maybe throw dynamite next to the guys and then snipe the dynamite. There are all kinds of different possibilities to tackle the scenarios, and that's mostly why I'm actually really enjoying this game.
Okay.
And
what else,
the other game I played was, of course, Shovel Knight, which you also played, though. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. You even played more than me, I guess, but I played like two hours of it, I think. And
how many knights have you conquered?
Like 5 or 6.
Okay, then we're about the same.
It's really good, I have to say. The art is great. I really like the music. in
hold,
it.
Hold on. Before we go on, I just want to say something about the art. And I mentioned this, I don't know if I mentioned this on Twitter, I've mentioned this to some people. This game, I think, is going to set the benchmark for indie games whenever they try to go, oh, we're retro-inspired. Because you can be retro-inspired and still look like a new and modern game, which this does. It has the pride of the NES, but it does it in such a clever way that it looks like a good, it looks like a game that would have been made on the system, but it looks like a good game, not like, just like, oh, here's some cheap sprites.
Well, there are things that obviously couldn't be done on NES. Like, there are some really giant sprites in some spots, and those obviously would not do this well on an NES without tons of flickering.
Yeah, which they mentioned. There's an article on Eurogame, I don't know if you read it, where it's like cheating the NES, where they go into the stuff that they had to change just because they knew, like, you can kind of stick to it, but, you know, there are certain stuff that we've kind of come to expect, and they said it just didn't work in the game setting, so they changed that stuff to make it better. And that's exactly what you need to do. Like, you shouldn't just be like, oh, yeah, we're making an 8-bit game, and this is how 8-bit games look, then nobody's going to care because they're kind of 8-bit. And after a while, I think we've had this discussion on the show before, that aesthetic choice has kind of run dry because everybody's used it.
Yeah.
But they use it well, like you say. Especially when it comes to, like, big enemies. Like, for example, I think in the first level you encounter this big dragon, and I think that thing just looks really cool, for example. Or the weird fish that can give you potions.
The Dashin fish, yes. The Dashin fish is amazing.
Yeah. That scene goes on for too long, but too long in the right way.
On the bright side, you don't have to do it every time you go back to him. So, if you want, you can...
ask him to dance.
Yeah. Which I told you did the second time I went back.
Of course. Just dance for me again. The music also really, really good. And the gameplay just really clicked right from the start. It's like... It's of course a lot of DuckTales. I mean, that was obvious the moment when they had, like, this jumping on heads with the shovel, but you can't jump around all the time like in DuckTales. So it kind of feels like it's a mixture of DuckTales and Mega Man because of how you have these
bosses.
Sub-weapons, basically, that you can use with magic.
See, I felt that was more like Castlevania. But, I mean, either way, it works. Like, when the people kept on saying it was like Mega Man, I thought it would be like you defeat the knights and you get their powers. But really what happens is like, you find secrets hidden throughout the stages. And there's usually like some dude in a chest. I think his name is Chester. And it's a terrible pun. But
he dances.
Yeah, almost everybody dances. There's the guy in town. Like, you find cheap music in the stages, and you give it to the guy in town. And this is a great visual cue, I think they do. It's like anytime you have something that somebody in town can use, like, they'll dance on the map so you know that you should go talk to them.
Yeah.
It's like if you have the music sheets to give back to him, you're going to town and he's dancing the jig. If you have a mail ticket, which you use to use it to buy health, the guy who does it is dancing in town. You can upgrade your armor, you can upgrade your shield to have different types of abilities. You upgrade your magic, you get different magical items, and those are kind of your sub-weapons. Or it doesn't have to be weapons. Like, one of them is the fishing rod, which you use to dig up fish, and you can get potions, and you can also get... I think you can also get the fishes for money and stuff like that.
I just thought it felt more like Mega Man because, like, how these chalices work, for example. The chalices are like power packs in Mega Man. And the weapons, I mean, in Castlevania, usually your sub-weapon is something you find in the level and not something you have all the time and can select at will, which you can in this game.
It has pieces from a lot of different games, because it also resembles Super Mario Bros. 3, and the use of the overworld map, in which like random enemies and tasks will pop up on the stage, and you can go back to
them. That's something I thought was really clever. Good use of that map as well, to not just make it a boring way to get around, but have these enemies in your way, and then you can get like mini levels and maybe even get some more money out of it, so you can buy some new stuff.
Oh yes, that was the other thing. It also has that, I guess what everybody says, Dark Souls death system, where when you die you give up some of your money, but if you get back to the place you died, you could recollect all of the money, because they're floating around in bags.
Except
but if you die,
sometimes if you died in a really bad spot, and
yeah.
you can't actually get to the money.
Yeah, like if you die in a bottomless pit, you probably don't want to jump back in it.
No.
Or if you die jumping over spikes, or actually one time I died jumping up two spikes. I jumped too high, and I was trying, like, I got back the money, but I was, like, really trying not to jump, because it's, like, right there. If I jumped too high, I would have just ended up screwing myself over again.
Mm. But spikes are not that bad. You can always use that bracelet that turns you into mist.
Oh, I don't have that yet.
Aha! If you have that, you can actually run over spikes.
I did not know that. I should look into that. I mean, that's the thing, though. You could miss a ton of these power-ups, because I already have, like, I have his power gauntlet, I have the fire rod, I have, like, the green ball. Mm. I have, like, four or five of them, and I don't know how to use the power gauntlet well, because I think there should be a way for you to just keep on punching things.
Yeah, I figured it out. You just have to press up all the time and just hit on, for me, it's the X button.
So you just keep on...
Keep on tapping it. And then you can basically get over pits that way and stuff, if you punch through the dirt.
Yeah, because they have, like, these little side states to make use of those. Like, there's the Forest of Faith in, and there's, like, the Gauntlet's Cross and stuff like that. Really nice little, little stages that you don't have to do, but they're right there. Don't think you have to beat all the bosses, because some of them open up more paths, and some of them just you beat them to beat them.
Yeah, doesn't look like you have to do all of them, but I do them. It's fun.
I do them. Well, one is fun. I also do them because every stage is something different, which I really appreciate. Like, it's not just like, oh, it's a different aesthetic. It's like, oh, we're gonna introduce a brand new set of enemies. We're gonna introduce a new gimmick, like the one in the fire stage. Where you get that gel stuff that you can put over the lava and it allows him to bounce, but there's a timer on it.
Mm.
Or I think that's the same one that introduces the explosive bricks, which you can shovel and it starts exploding everything around it, which makes for a really frustrating point, and I really hate to see the end of the game when my death count comes up for that stage. I kept on missing this one jump, and finally I tried it like 10 or 15 times. But yeah, it was like, because you can go to a witch in the first town, and she'll tell you how many times you've died and how much gold.
Oh, really? I haven't even noticed that.
Yeah, if you go downstairs from where, like, the health and magic guy is, there's, like, a room down there. And that's another interesting thing. If you go, there are certain people in town who will ask you to beat a certain boss, and when you go back, they'll give you, like, money or they'll give you something.
Mm.
It's a really nice touch. Again, there's a lot to do. There's a lot of reasons to go back to town. There's the really nifty cutscenes in between, like, when you beat a certain number of bosses, where it's, like, the Shovel Knight sleeping and stuff like that, and he'll have this dream about, like, his Shield Knight, I guess his 1-3-of, and you have to capture her. The first time, it's pretty easy, but as you go on, they'll start putting in, like, enemies and, like, all the enemies from previous stages and stuff like that. So it gets really crazy because you get, like, the ghost and you'll get, like, the munching things and then you get the knights who throw axes and all this other stuff.
Have you ever not catch her? What does happen?
I haven't not caught her yet.
Me neither, so I was wondering what would happen.
And I assume this is standard on the Steam version, but since the Wii U and 3DS doesn't have a global achievement system, the game has what they call feats, which are basically the game's equivalent of achievements.
Yep, the Steam version has them as well in-game, but of course they are also linked to, like you said, Steam achievements.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. The Wii U version, which is the version I have, also has the Digger's Diary, which is basically me first post integrated into the game, which is kind of nifty. It's kind of, again, you know, people say Dark Souls, but it's kind of nifty. It's, you go there, and it's just basically people's stream of thoughts on, like, a certain stage or a certain part of the stage, and you can get hints, and you can get frustrations and stuff like that. And it's done really nice because it's kind of set up, like, it's set up in the graphical style of the game, and, like, instead of, like, yeah, it's like, yeah. Yeah, or something like that. It's some, you know, ancient speak. But it's a really, really well-done feature. Mm. And I believe later on, I don't know if the Steam version is getting this as well. There's also going to be, like, a four-player mode that's added. And the ability to play as boss knights. Well, that's coming to all versions.
I would assume they will add this stuff to the Steam version as well. What I also thought was interesting mechanically is the idea that, I mean, levels have checkpoints in them. Multiple ones, which is great, I think. I mean, it takes away some of the challenge, I guess, but not every game has to be as difficult as Super Meat Boy or something. But the interesting mechanic is that if you want to make the game harder and maybe make some more money, you can actually destroy the checkpoints yourself, and that gets you money, and then you have to try to go through the level with out that specific checkpoint.
I really like that, actually.
But here's the other thing, though. Is the game doesn't really teach you anything. So the first time I broke one of those, I'm like, oh, I could break these. It gives me money. I didn't notice it. The whole time I was just running past them. And I kept on dying. I'm like, why isn't it bringing me back to this checkpoint? And then it dawned on me after like the second or third time, there's like a giant X. Like, oh, I destroyed it, so it's no longer a checkpoint. Yeah. I'm like, why didn't you tell me that? But
one townsperson actually tells you that, but you, of course, you have to talk to them to actually know that. But this game is also just really good at teaching you mechanics without explicitly telling you them.
Oh yeah, it's fantastic.
It's like in the good old days when you watch, like, I don't know who made the video of.
It was Egoraptor.
Egoraptor, who made the video about how the first stage of Mega Man X is absolute genius and how it teaches you mechanics without ever telling you something about them. And this game basically does that all the time.
It works great,
and I really like that.
Yeah, it's like there was one I mentioned before with the spikes. There's a part of the stage where you kind of go in a room and there's these bricks. Like, you step on them and they send you upwards. And it's like, oh, okay, it sends you upwards. You don't know anything about it. Next room, it sends you upward, but there's spikes on the ceiling. But now you know, like, you step on this, it shoots up, so you want to jump off. Or the thing with the jello stuff, that they first introduced that in a non-threatening manner. And then the next room, it's like, yeah, you're going to have to use this a lot. So good thing we taught you in the room before. One of the ones that I didn't know, and I thought they were enemies at first, was the, I think it's the Zinch Manor. It's the one with, like, the little green bobs that you can pounce off of, and you can shovel them up and pounce higher.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that, but, you know, like, the ways to defeat enemies in this game is you either shovel them or you jump from above. So I tried jumping from above. It's like, oh, it shoots me higher. And then what you can do is you can do two of them, so one, it's like a ladder and stuff like that. So, again, different ways to set up your set up things without stopping the game saying, okay, this is what you need to do. This is how you do it now.
Yeah, and as soon as you learn them, you sometimes you start looking for things because, of course, all the levels have, like, secret areas and stuff like that, which you sometimes just secret in the sense that you have to shovel a specific spot and then you get in there, or you have to use the new stuff you learned most of the time to get to where you need to be.
Yeah, and that's another thing is, I mean, almost every stage has a different graphical style. Not, a, you know, it's a uniform style, but it has, like, a different aesthetic choice. Yeah. So what happens is a lot of those exploding blocks and stuff are designed differently from stage to stage. And once you find it in the stage, you will recognize it throughout the stage, but you have to find it first in that stage. Like, yeah. I think one's, like, a skull face, and the other one is, like, if the wall's discolored and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's something I noticed. The further you go ahead in the game, apparently the subtler it gets. Which I think is good. It's fine. Also, there's a neat homage in the wall stuff. If you find, like, you often find food in walls, and of course it's like a grilled turkey or chicken or whatever. like in Castlevania.
Yeah, and again, it does a lot of homages to that era without being like, oh, haha, isn't this funny? Even though the game itself is kind of funny and it pokes fun at itself, I think it mentions Kickstarter several times. Like, there's one time that you find a sheet of music and you give it to the guy in town, and he's like, oh, this song really helped kickstart my career.
Yep.
And there's another one. I think it's called The Hall of Champions. And it's like, and you paid him, I think it's 5,000 gold. And he's like, you know, then again, that's the risk you run paying for something in advance before you know the details, which is basically the whole principle of Kickstarter. And I believe this is where you go and you can find, well, this, like, they had people who submitted a certain amount of money in Kickstarter that you got into the game, and this is where you go to see it.
Mm. Also, what I thought was kind of funny, guys. I don't want to say too much about it, but I thought it was pretty clever that there was one boss who was kind of a wuss in the beginning, and then, of course, no boss ever had two stages, but this one, of course, has. Because the first one was kind of easy.
Yeah, and there's a lot of fun sub bosses, like the giant dragon you mentioned before. There's the hawk or the griffin. And every stage again has different enemies, has different sub bosses. There was one, I think it's the underwater one, that has like the giant fish, and that one tricks you because you go down there treasure chest, but you know it is in the middle of nowhere, and you go in and it's like, oh, it's attached to a giant enemy, and then it becomes a chase sequence, which is kind of nifty. Another one that caused me more headaches than it needed to. And I think because the physics change when you're underwater. So I was trying to jump on the things he shoot out, like the little fish missiles, I guess. I was trying to jump on them, but you jump a lot slower, so you land a lot slower as well. So I wish my time was just all off with that. So I just started to avoid him until I got to the end and had to fight him.
Also, you jump incredibly high in the water in this game.
Yeah. So yes, if you can, it's $15 on Steam, 3DS, or Wii U. I think Martin and I are basically saying the same thing. Buy this game.
And as of net recording, it's not available in Europe on anything but PC. So if you're like me and you want to get it on a Nintendo console, you have to wait.
I would assume they have to put the localization in and then get through certification. So I guess probably another month or two, probably.
RIP.
Yeah.
I would assume so.
I mean, on the bright side, there isn't a ton coming out this summer, so you'll still have something to fall back on when it comes out. The rest of us will be done with it by next week or so.
Also, I heard it has actually New Game Plus, which is also
cool.
Yes,
it does. It's one of the feats. There's actually a couple of them. I think there's one with beating the game without any power-ups. There's one without, I think, beating it. I don't know if it's the game or the stage without collecting any gems.
Yeah, there's one feat of those, yeah. I think one stage.
Yeah, you have to
do without collecting any money, yeah.
I think there's also one where you have to complete a stage using, like, 16 OIS shovels.
Huh.
Which, I mean, it's possible if you kind of focus more on using your magic.
Yeah. You could also enhance it by getting that armor of it, which gives you more magic points.
Yeah, I guess so.
One thing I haven't figured out yet how I actually increase my magic points. So far, I only gotten tickets for the for my health.
Oh, you just go to her and pay her.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
I was expecting the same thing because it's like, go talk to. I thought the guy was like, oh, you can buy magic tickets or you can buy health tickets.
Yeah.
He runs out of them and you just go to her and you buy it.
Ah, okay, I see.
Yeah.
Then I will probably get a couple of magic tickets. I mean, I don't use magic that much, but. Would be nice to have it to fall back on.
Oh, I use it for bosses. It's cheap. I usually just send out the green orb because it bounces back and forth. And that gets two or three hits on them if they're kind of in a stationary position. And I'm like, okay, that works.
I have so far done every boss completely just with a shovel.
Yeah, I mean, again, there's different strategies for everybody. I have pouncing on them. There's certain bosses because they have these long animations. So if you get it well enough, you can just kind of pounce on their head. I actually think there's a feat for that, for just beating them with the overhead one, and I think I got that. I could be wrong, though. But yes, again, fantastic game. Odyssey, I mean, I can't think of anything that I dislike with it right now.
A lot of people are like that, which makes me even more sad that I can't play it.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's worth checking out. On the other end of the spectrum, I guess I might as well talk about this since I do have to put... I got Amelio for review, which is another Wii U eShop title that comes out this week. And if Shovel Knight was kind of the NES era game, this is kind of like the N64 era game. It's a... I don't want to say collectathon, but it is kind of, it's like Super Monkey Ball meets Sonic in a way. It's a puzzle. It's not a platformer per se. It's like a maze type game where you're this rounded armadillo, and you basically have to navigate collecting. I don't even know what they're called. You collect gems, and you also collect these little animal creatures, and the animal creatures are kind of the things you're saving and stuff like that. And it's kind of in the old design of, like, you know, those really experimental mascot platforming games in the late 90s when the N64 was kind of big, you know, when you got stuff like Glover and Banjo-Kazoo and stuff like that. And it kind of runs like an N64 game at times, which I don't mean in the best way. There are times where it really just, like, freezes or pauses for a second or two, and it really, like I mentioned before, I'm not really a stickler for frame rate, but I do notice when it's not great, and this kind of seems to have that problem where a lot of it does seem to be chugging at times, which is really odd. I don't know if it was an effect they were going for. If it was, I'm sorry, you shouldn't.
Yeah.
And if it was an accident, it was kind of weird, but yeah, it's like, it's really noticeable when it happens. And I'm just like, it really shouldn't be this far into the, especially for an eShop title. But I'm having fun with it for the most part. It's a lot of, you know, it's mostly just trying to navigate the spaces and finding new ways to beat enemies and stuff. It's fun. It's simple. I think it's only going to be $10. If it's not, I probably wouldn't recommend it for more than $10 right now. I'm about 2.5 worlds in. I mean, a world and a half, I should say. And just like N64 platformers, and I guess Mario still does this to an extent, there's also certain, I guess, locks in place for you to progress. So, like, for you to beat the boss stage, you have to collect a certain amount of things in each previous stage. And then there are special secret devils, which I think defeats the purpose if you need them anyhow. And you have to collect, like, these giant red orbs in those, so you need that to enter the boss battle. So it's like you basically have to find these secrets and stuff like that to progress throughout the game. And again, if it's a secret, I really find it redundant. Don't hide it if you need it to progress the game and call it a secret. But yeah, it's fun. It is what it is. It's really hard to really say anything too positive about it coming off of Shovel Knight, which, again, I mentioned is going to be the benchmark for indie games trying to replicate all the errors of games where you can do it and do it well without kind of replicating the problems people have with those games.
Yeah.
I think, going back to Shovel Knight real quick and this in comparison, I think, I forget who said it, but Shovel Knight is what we remember NES games being like. Like, this is the best parts of those games, and unnecessarily the parts we hated about those games. You know, there's a reason it's called NES Hard, and this is kind of reminding me of the stuff I didn't like about some N64 games back then, especially if you go back to them now. So, yeah, there's that. What about you, Daniel? Have you been playing anything
new? I haven't been playing a whole lot. I've been playing the fan translation of Ace Attorney Investigations 2, which, by the way, this puts Capcom's translations to shame. I can't believe that there are people out there that are willing to do this for free. And, like, they translated everything. They took all of the images, all the evidence images, and everywhere there would be Japanese writing on them, they replaced it with English. And the only reason why you can't tell, like, you can tell, should I say, that it's not a Capcom translation is because there's no spelling mistakes in it, which is not the reason why you want to be able to tell whether it's not a Capcom translation or not.
Let's be honest, though, Capcom translations are just terrible in general.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I don't know who they use, but they really should stop using them.
Yeah.
I mean, for the most part. I mean, Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate was fine, but that was 8.4. Otherwise, like, the Resident Evil translations or Ace Attorney, it's all just dire.
Why is everybody so quiet?
I don't know. The game, otherwise, the game plays like an Ace Attorney investigations game. You walk around, you pick up evidence, you get into arguments with people. The new mechanic is like this weird. You have like an argument with somebody, and you have to pick and choose when to respond and what to respond with, and it doesn't always make the most sense as to like what you're supposed to do. So you can just get away with brute forcing it, and there's no. Like, the only thing that happens if you lose is you start it again from the beginning. So if you remember the two or three things you have to do and what order you have to do them in, you can just get away with it. It's kind of strange.
But isn't that trial and error gameplay? Ugh.
Like, it's part of, like, it's, Ace Attorney has kind of been trial and error anyway. Because a lot of the times it's hard to follow what the game wants you to follow, like how, the order that the game is thinking in. But in this one, in these sections, it's even more so like that. It's really strange. Aside from that, the music is kind of crappy, like the other Ace Attorney Investigations game, and the pacing is really strange, like the other Ace Attorney Investigations game. So they haven't really fixed any of its problems, but. It's more Ace Attorney until Ace Attorney 6 comes out. So, I'm happy with it. You can only really get hold of it if you're interested by piracy, really, unless you own a copy of Ace Attorney Investigations 2. And if you do, then you need to reevaluate your priorities because that game's only in Japanese. But, you know.
That
if Capcom wanted
before.
Us to buy it, they would have sold it over here, you know?
Well, we mentioned last week there's a reason Capcom is in the position they are in right now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I've been playing, really.
Yeah, and I guess with news at Capcom, we might as well start with the news. And I think if we're going to poke fun at Capcom, we need to poke fun at the new victim of the week, which is Crytek. Which has had a interesting week of he said, she said. The gist of it is nobody's getting paid. And they are, in between projects, they canceled Rise 2. What else are they? Oh, they're doing a bunch of free-to-play games.
There's
now,
a couple
they?
Of free-to-play games, and they're doing Homefront as well.
Yeah, and, oh yeah, I forgot they're doing Homefront. So Homefront better be a massive hit, even though the first one soured people on it.
And didn't sell very well.
Yeah, yeah. But again, you can sell so-so the first time, and then if people were impressed, you can do better the second time. People weren't impressed the first time.
I don't even think it sold so-so.
It sold a couple of million.
Yeah, but it also took a company down together with the U-Draw thing.
yeah, but I mean, to be fair, I guess it depends on what they're doing with Crytek. The difference was that THQ put too much money in expecting a much bigger return than they got. Where let's be honest, nobody budgets Modesty anymore in the game industry. But I think we had this discussion. Like, I never got what Crytek did because they employ over 800 people and they make one game every 2 to 3 years, if that.
Well, I think the idea of Crytek is they make most of their money off of engine licenses, because I know that before they changed to a subscription model with the CryEngine, they were charging a very big sum of money for it, which is probably why so few games used it until now. And they make military sims as well, apparently.
But it seems like that military stuff is not as lucrative as it seemed.
Yeah.
Well, you can only make so many military sims so often, so, you know.
Yeah,
and here's the thing that upsets me the most about this Crytek situation is This is just a repeat of what happened to Free Radical after LucasArts screwed them over. People were going to work and finding that the office was shut and that they weren't getting paid when they should have been. And, you know, the whole point of Crytek buying them was to stop this from happening to those people, and now it's just happening again. And it's really sad because those guys just can't catch a break.
Yeah, it is what it is. It's really a bad situation. I thought you were going to say the worst thing about it was you didn't get a new time slot.
I mean, obviously that is obviously bad as well. But like at this point, it's more about the people. Imagine like going to work and finding the doors shut, right? And then what, a month later finding out that a company has swooped in to save your job, and then 4 years, 5 years down the line, it's happening again. You know.
Can I say one thing, though, about this? Something I also saw on Twitter, which I kind of agree with. What is it with this loyalty of employees at these game companies? If I was not paid for 3 months, I don't think I would show up to work.
Well, I guess it's like people... people being naive. I mean, if it's a culture that you enjoy being a part of, and there are people there that are your friends, and you've had spent a long time working with them, of course you don't just want to leave it.
Well, I think it also depends. Did you read the Kotaku article from the week before about horror stories about people who went out, companies that went out of business and stuff like that?
Read part of it.
Okay, because there was one in particular that was related to this where people weren't getting paid, but they were showing up to work and not working because they weren't being paid for it. I mean, you could be in the building. That doesn't necessarily mean you're working. And the assumption was probably that, you know, like you don't want to burn bridges in case they do start paying people.
Yeah.
But I assume at the same time, once that started happening, people are probably already sending out their resume. And it's just showing up to keep up appearances so that if stuff does turn around, you do get paid. I mean, so far, we really haven't seen a history of that where a company is struggling and all of a sudden they start bringing in money. But this could be the one time. And again, I think the other thing is a lot of people, and I'm in this boat as well, it does kind of get on you being by yourself. So people probably just go into office to have something to do for 8 hours. Because, I mean... what else are you going to do? Most of the day, people aren't... it's not like you have money to spend.
And not only that is, if you've got low morale, just being at home doing nothing will not help that at all.
Yeah, you're around with friends, and you can probably go out drinking, or probably... again, another story from the Kotaku article, people just spent their afternoons getting drunk off of all their office supply.
And it's just a shame. Those people don't deserve that. They made my favorite games, two of my favorite games ever... and they're just in the shitter again. And actually, I think it speaks to... Crytek is clearly a company that doesn't know exactly where it wants to go, because they've said various things. Like, they've said lately that they want to be free-to-play only, so why are you making Homefront, you know? Single-player is going down the drain. Well, why are you making Homefront? And why did you make Rise?
Free-to-play only thing. I think they said that before Crysis 3 came out, even if I'm not mistaken.
And this is it. So, I mean, doesn't Rise have a multiplayer?
It does.
Well, there you go, then. I mean, no, it has a single-player, and it's not free-to-play. So they've at least started on 3 games since saying this crap, and they hasn't been any fruits.
Well,
I can understand doing a Rise, though, because that's basically, for Microsoft, a console holder, that's usually a safe bet. But, Homefront 2 especially is like, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's going to be a interesting ride. Like I said, most of it we haven't talked about in trouble. It has been a story like this first came out of. It's not even like a big name site, and I think Eurogamer collaborated it. Then Crytek was like, no, this isn't true at all. Then Kotaku came to Kotaku came in, and then like, developers started speaking to them.
Not a big side. I think at first of all, but Game Study, that's basically one of the biggest German PC magazines.
So yeah, not a big side for us Americans.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah. And on the same note, I guess, it seems like Rhode Island is settling one of their lawsuits with Kurt Schilling's.
This is still going on.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
And I hate to be one of those guys, but I sometimes feel like gamers' priorities are screwed up, because instead of thinking about like, what it costs the city or taxpayers or anything, like people are upset because they didn't get a Kingdom of Amalia 2 or something like that. I'm like, yeah, there's a lot more going on here than the fact that you didn't get a sequel to one of your games, and that people lost jobs, a city bankrolled, a joint endeavor, people are trying to get their money back. There's a lot of things beyond getting a sequel.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. But yeah,
that's something we didn't mention, right? That apparently Rise 2 was canned.
Yeah.
I don't think there is anybody that is
Microsoft actually wants to own the IP.
Which makes sense if you're Microsoft, because if you raise at the company, I mean, Crytek isn't really that loyal to their franchise. The only thing they really do is Crysis.
And not only that, is they basically Crysis 2 is the antithesis of basically everything that Crysis 1 stood for anyway.
Yeah,
so,
and they probably didn't want something to happen like with Gears of War. I mean, basically, Epic's like, we're not making those type of games anymore. If Microsoft didn't buy it, that meant one of the brands that was associated with them was no longer on the system.
Yeah, so, and that was easy money for Epic.
Yeah. And I assume Crytek may become desperate enough to do that at some point, even though I really don't see what Microsoft sees in Rise. But whatever. So yeah, there's that. I guess really quickly, again, it wasn't a major week for news. Platinum in association with Activision and Nickelodeon are doing a Legend of Korra video game.
That's fucking weird.
Well, I think
this combination I just heard, Activision with Nickelodeon Platinum.
Yeah,
am I having an aneurysm or something?
My only concern with this is that that Activision rush it, because if you look at Transformers: Rise of the Darkspawn, which just came out.
You look at anything licensed from Activision...
Well, no, actually, no, because the two Transformers games before that, Rise of the
Darkspawn, good. All the stuff that ties into movie or show or something is just crappy.
especially Rise of the Darkspawn, because that's only just come out, and it's getting trashed in reviews.
So. Yeah, I was about to say, it's funny, and I think Martin, but any of the Transformers games that are tied directly to the release of a movie suck. Any year that they aren't, they are really good.
Yeah.
And it's the same company making them.
I know.
This one is
still being made by High Moon. Because Activision decided that they have this bunch of people that really love Transformers, and they could make really good Transformers games. So the best use of their talent would be to get them to port Advanced Warfare to Last Generation. So...
Yeah. But yeah, it's so sad. But yeah, I am okay. Do either one of you watch Legend of Korra?
No.
Okay. Because season 3 just started just last night for us, which means that this game is already dated because it's supposed to take place in between seasons 2 and 3. And I watched it, and season 2 and 3 are separated by 2 weeks. Like, they already say it in the first episode that it's been 2 weeks since the end of the last season. And it's like, okay, so this game's going to take place over the course of 2 weeks. And the main character hasn't left the city, so I don't know what they're doing. I mean, I assume it's probably not going to be strict. It's probably just something to say. But I'm like, yeah, so this game has no purpose whatsoever as far as timeline. You just want to say that so people who are Korra fans are like, oh yeah, this is going to continue the story, awesome, or something stupid like that.
Well, I think the main draw is not that it's going to continue the story, is that it's a Platinum game.
Oh yeah, I mean, for gamers, I'm talking, because, you know, it is a licensed game, so they are trying to get it to the people who watch the show. But yeah, the draw for us as gamers is the fact that it's made by Platinum. And let's be honest, Platinum could put any one of their action game engines into this, and I'd be content with it.
Just so long as we get another Game Boy Platinum, it doesn't matter.
I mean, not just that we get another game from Platinum, but it could be, I don't know, it could be the Wonderful 101, it could be Bayonetta, it could be Metal Gear Revengeance, any of their engines, any of them make for great action games, so they could put anything in there, and I'd be content with it. So, it might be a cash-in, but as long as they're doing the actual gameplay, it seems like it's going to be a fun game, which is all we can ask for at this point. I will say one thing, and it is what it is. It is so weird that this isn't coming out on a Nintendo system. And I get that third parties have kind of abandoned it, but...
Well, this is the thing, though. Is Activision obviously hasn't abandoned it completely, because Rise of the Darkspawn just came out on Wii U. Granted, it's not a very good game, but it's still released on the Wii U.
But yeah, if you watch Nickelodeon, Nintendo's literally like the only game company that actually advertises on that channel. And for them to be like the one who isn't getting a Nickelodeon game for the audience they literally go after, it's so weird thing. But at the same time, Activision and Nickelodeon skipped out on the Ninja Turtles games last year as well, so I don't know. But yeah, I'm interested in this. It's a downloadable title. And there was an somewhat interesting conversation that came out of it as well with the role of game media in previews, because I think it was Jason I don't know how to pronounce his name.
The guy at Kotaku, yeah.
Yeah.
Schreier.
Who pointed out that the PlayStation blog preview sounded exactly the same as every other preview sort of game. And if your preview sounds like PR pitches, what is the purpose of you doing previews?
Yeah, but, I mean, this is a conversation all the time.
He has a point.
But yeah, he has a point, but this is a conversation that's not new. I mean,
oh, it's not
there
new.
Are people like Jim Sterling, they say that they don't count themselves as game journalists, because for the most part they just do the advertising for publishers, you know?
Yeah, it's because it was actually the same conversation kind of popped up on 8-4-Play, where they mentioned, like, you know, and we kind of mentioned the same thing, with the Treehouse Direct, Nintendo handed all the PR for Nintendo at E3, so you didn't need the game press reporting on, you know, you didn't need hands-on from the game press, because
Nintendo
it was already
been, doing it.
Yeah, it was already being taken care of. So what they're saying isn't so much what's the purpose of the game press, but how is the game press going to evolve to become relevant in this new age? Because, again, it's a fair point. Like, why do I care what IGN or Polygon have to say about the Legend of Korra game if it's really going to sound exactly like the pitch I'm going to get from Activision about
that game? That's exactly the problem, though, of how previews have worked and are still working on most websites and magazines, though. I mean, if it's just regurgitation of information anyone can get from the publisher's website or from any video of them, what's the point of writing it in the first place?
A lot of journalists go to publisher-hosted preview events instead of them being sent the code, you know? And instead, if you go to a preview event, I mean, they even do review events, for God's sake, nowadays, and if you go to a preview event, like, you're going to have a guy just tell you everything, and you're just going to be writing that down, and then you're going to put that on your website. Instead of you actually playing the game, you know, you're going to have pressure from people that are actually from the publisher.
Yeah, and what I want to say, though, is that there is a point in previews, but the only preview I care about are the ones where the journalist actually played the game and actually gives an impression of what he or she thought of the game. And just be honest, was it fun what you played or not? And that's the whole idea there. Is what they are promising, are you seeing that actually there? But a lot of previews are actually not doing that.
No, they just describe it, and it's just like, that's not what I want. I want.
Well, it's not, this is kind of getting to both of your points, and this is, I think, what Martin was getting at as well. A lot of times, it's not even hands-on. It's like, okay, we're going to play through this, and then you write up what you saw, and then, like, oh, the developer promises this will be fixed by the time it comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even from seeing something, you can get an impression if does this look fun or not.
Yeah, but everybody takes the viewpoint of, oh, it's gonna, like, there was another, I forgot who did it, somebody did an article this week about, like, the top 11 guys of E3, and one of them was like, you know, like, you always give feedback to the developers when you play the game, and they're always like, oh, it's going to change by the final release, and most of the time, it doesn't change. I think he said it was like 95% of the time what you see at E3 is what you get as far as the final product is. Not, you know, like, not the content, but like bugs and, you know, graphical glitches and loading and stuff like that. So
I'm not surprised. I mean, just when I was at Gamescom last year, and I remember playing what was it? The free-to-play first-person shooter.
That doesn't narrow it down.
Yeah. That's also on Steam.
Warface, Wargamer.
No, Blacklight.
Oh, right, yeah.
Blacklight. They promised it was going to be 60 FPS, and it kind of ran like shit at Gamescom, and of course they promised me, no, it's going to run at 60 FPS when it comes out. It came out. It didn't. I mean, there's only so much you can do in so little time.
Yeah, and I mean, for the most part, a lot of these are, like, it's not like these are special. It's ripped from the game code. It's just, it's you know, what they say, vertical slice. It's taking the best parts that they cleaned up. But it's like, if this is the best part, like, the rest of the game back home isn't that much better, and you're trying to get it to this level. Yeah, it's one of those things. But yeah, it is an interesting point, and I think it's a conversation that Daniel said comes up often, but it's been something that's been in the forefront in the last 2 weeks. We didn't talk about it last week because it's not news and it's not necessarily related to us. But there was the Gamer Sutra article about, like, how the YouTube generation is kind of replacing traditional game press. And I've said that. I said as much when Giant Bomb started doing their quick clips, which everybody copies now. It's a video game. People want to see the video part of it. I honestly don't much care for written impressions or reviews of games because that doesn't, like, you, part of it is seeing the game and seeing how it moves and seeing the things that you're talking about. Not necessarily, because it's hard to explain some stuff in games because, again, it's a very interactive medium where if you see it and kind of speak about it, which is, again, you know, part of the purpose of Let's Play. I enjoy, not necessarily Let's Play, but I enjoy the idea of taking a piece of a game and doing commentary to a fresh commentary, which is why, again, I think I don't read Giant Bomb reviews. I watch their quick looks because it tells you more about their experience with the game than anything because they are reacting to what they're playing. And I think that's what you need more than, like, oh, you know, this game was good, it has great graphics, the story was fun. And I think the other thing with game previews is it's hard to do because it's unlike any other medium since, again, it's so interactive. You know, movies, we kind of get sold on with trailers, and that makes sense because it is an audio-visual thing. We get to see that. It kind of gives you beats of the stories, even though nowadays they give you the entire story in 2 minutes. It can get you Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Except for when you told the trailer, which doesn't make any sense.
It's a Michael Bay film. I'm assuming that is telling us what we need to know. I did see Transformers 4 this week, and don't.
I'm not surprised. I've seen some great tweets about that film.
Well, let's put it this way. I thought the second one was shit, and I thought the third one was shit. So I naturally assumed that the first one was shit, and this one would be shit too. Because
the first one was kind of alright.
Yeah, they all kind of become self-indulgent after that.
The second one was shit, and then the rest, of course, was also shit.
I mean, in my defense, I saw it for free, so I didn't have to pay them.
didn't pay for the third one either. I was invited.
Yeah.
And I hated every minute of it.
Oh my gosh! Like this, it's a 3-hour movie, and it feels like a 3-hour movie. But this isn't our movie review podcast. But my point was like it's hard to sell games in that same manner. And for some reason, demos are becoming less and less of a thing. I mean, alphas and betas are going in the right direction, where you get actual people to play the game, and you get more out of that because it's actual people who are going to play the game, and they're finding, you know, they're people who's going to mess around with it, who's going to find the things that break the game, things that are unbalanced and stuff like that, and not just people who are trying to play to write 1,000 words about what you should expect from this game. You know, like you go on YouTube and you find videos of people playing Destiny or Battlefield and giving your honest impressions of that, and not like, oh, you know, by default we expect this to be released. It's like, no, you know, EA's kind of screwed us over enough, so we're not going to buy Battlefield Hotline based off of this debate or something like that. Which I have seen that reaction. I've actually, I think, was it IGN who ran that article?
It was Polygon and Ben Kachera writing something semi-sensible. It wasn't 100% sensible, but it was semi-sensible.
Yeah. I mean, at this, we've heard some of your promises from EA several times now, and it continues to happen. Like, don't give them the benefit of the doubt. If it's working at launch and you want to buy Battlefield, do it after launch, and other people have gone through the experiment with it. Not, you know, not be their guinea pigs.
Yeah, buy, get the game after it's been broken for 8 months, not while it's broken for 8 months.
Yeah. So there's that. I'm losing track of what we're talking about now. Oh, Minecraft. Passed 54... Oh, it's closing in on 54 million copies sold.
Which is ridiculous.
Which I think will make it the third best-selling game of all time right now.
Oh, that, it won't be that way for long. It will shoot up there to first.
Yeah.
Because it's on everything ever, and it's...
I mean, it's even coming out to new consoles as well.
Yeah.
It's coming to Xbox One and PS4, so it will continue to sell.
Yeah, it is insane how big that franchise has gotten from what it started off as. But for good reason. And again, it shows that you don't need top-of-the-line graphics or technology to become a monster.
But well, you need a really good idea.
Yeah. And that's the thing. A lot of people don't have good ideas. So if you don't have good ideas, sparkle them with the spectacle.
I personally bought 2 copies of Minecraft so far, and I might still buy a third one.
I have never played Minecraft, actually.
Minecraft is fun.
Yeah, I think
you would enjoy it all.
Oh, I'm sure I would. Honestly, it's not even a thing against Minecraft. It's just never come up to me. I've just been playing so many games now, I don't even think about, like, oh, I gotta go back and play this game now. It's a summer drought, but I'm like, I can't stop playing video games. I need a break.
No, I just meant because you're also, like, someone who really enjoys co-op and that game together with other people is just great.
Oh, yeah, and it's the whole sandbox. It looks like a fun game, like I said. I haven't had the time.
You just missed the boat on that one.
Yeah.
Nah, maybe when it comes out with a new system and you have one of them, then it's time for Minecraft.
Or maybe if it ever comes out on the 2 systems with a touchscreen, which would work well for its...
I have to say, though, on Wii U, it would be quite amazing because you would have immediate inventory management and crafting on the second screen. That would be quite great.
It is bizarre, and there are only people to pay for that on Nintendo. Like, honestly speaking, I would be after that game. It caters to your audience, it's what kids are playing, and you have this giant touchscreen that people keep on saying you don't make any use of, and you have this great franchise that could make great use of it. You don't usually throw money at them. You have it.
That's exactly what Microsoft and Sony did, because that game would not have been on consoles if it wasn't for Microsoft and Sony, who threw money at them.
Yeah, Nintendo's thing is they don't like to throw money, which I get, but
there are times where you should be, and this is one of them.
Like, when people say they should throw money for GTA and Call of Duty, that makes no sense, because it's not going to do anything for them. But a game that caters to an audience you get already...
It has Mario and Minecraft on it. That's like a parent's dream console.
And you
could even do stuff like work a little closer with them, and maybe... put, like, Nintendo stuff into the special version of Minecraft.
You know how much
that would sell?
They do it with Tech. You did it with Tech, and you did it with Lego City. Like, throw in actual Nintendo Easter eggs. Heck, combine it with the amiibos. Get, like, you can use the toys. You can interact and put these figures and get items from their games in here or something stupid like that. Anyhow.
Why are we doing the work for them?
Somebody has to do it for them. I mean, like I said, there's certain times when people say they should do stuff. I'm like, whatever, that makes no sense. But Minecraft, being this huge franchise for kids and families and everybody, and you're just like sitting there doing nothing. And now that, you know, like there was an interview at E3 where they're like, oh, maybe we'll do something where it becomes big in Japan. And Sony got the jump on them. It's already out on PS3 and it's selling well there too. So, yeah.
Yep.
And I'm already going on this tangent because we already have like two other things to talk about.
Also, good thing to say when it becomes big in Japan. Why does that matter? That shouldn't be a thing that matters.
Not when it becomes big in Japan, that they would help it become big in Japan. Like part of, like what they do sometimes is they do the cross, like they won't pay you, but they'll do cross promotion, which is what they did with Monster Hunter, where they promoted it in the West, or like Dragon Quest IX, where they promoted that in the West and stuff like that.
Okay, but that still doesn't make any sense because Minecraft is, like you said, again, already happening with Sony. And
well, yeah, I think at the time it came out like last week. So, but yeah, the point is, do it. Anyhow, going back to random, I guess while we're on Nintendo real quick, Iwata was re-elected as the president of Nintendo. I don't think, I mean, the internet wants him gone, but I don't think it was expected.
The internet doesn't know how to run a business. That's the difference.
I also don't think that Iwata is that great in his position.
I think
he must be doing something right to be re-elected.
Losing money is not doing something right.
No, but like he's
yeah,
steering the boat back on course very slowly.
I guess I don't want to get into Iwata too much because he does. But I just broadly speaking, you don't necessarily want to shit can somebody once you start losing money right away, because what's going to happen is it means that the next person comes in doesn't have any confidence or expect that they need to do a bang up job before they get booted as well. And if you keep on doing it, if you need a long term vision, and in the short term he may not be working for them, but you know, over the next, like really, I do think next year, the next 12 months are going to be the real test for him, because it would have been 4 years, and I do think 4 years is a reasonable time. But I mean, it's the same thing with Kasarai. You know, like, Sony's been losing billions of dollars, but he keeps on, you know, like, he's trying to right a wrong that was done before he came in. I mean, granted, I think the other thing is everything kind of falls on Iwata because he's the figurehead we know. When there is an actual board at Nintendo that makes all these decisions, he's just the public face of the company. But yeah, I do think that we will, the next, you know, especially with the Amiibo and the quality of life stuff, like if that stuff really doesn't catch, I think then you'll see a new president. But I think, and I think, you know, this is usually what people say. I think the problem people have with Nintendo won't go away with Iwata. I think it is a systematic.
Oh, it's a very sort of company cultural thing.
Yeah.
It's not a problem that's like, I mean, Nintendo's, Like we've said before, Nintendo's main problems are communication. They don't communicate with their customers that well. They don't necessarily understand everything that they want. They can't communicate with the developers terribly well. They're obviously internal developers, yes, but not third-party developers. And they don't understand everything that the third-party developers want. And that's always been a problem with Nintendo. And it's not something that's going to be done. Like, it's not kick Iwata out of the door, there we go, to solve the problem.
Yeah.
And to communication, I would also add, like, I don't know what I would call it, like, that they are very, very, like, insular, that they don't really pay attention to what happens elsewhere.
Yeah.
Like, they can't see, they seem very reluctant and in certain developments that are obviously positive, and a lot of people, I mean, the people who actually buy the games are liking, and they are just not able to see them as positives and
well, they
implement
just said,
stuff.
They said recently that they won't put Twitch on the Wii U because it's not fun. Well, if it's not fun, why do people do it? Why do people make money off of it, you know?
Well, okay. I think that's twofold, and I think this is kind of going to Martin's. Part of it is sometimes they are, I don't know how you phrase it, but sometimes they do say stuff where it's really like, we need an excuse. Because, I mean, the big part is that we can't run Twitch negatively.
Well, I can understand, like, if they made an excuse up to say, oh, yeah, that we will never have Twitch broadcasting, but why doesn't it have a Twitch viewer?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, if you can't have it broadcast, have it get your Wii U to take the streams, because people like watching fucking people play video games. It doesn't matter whether it's fun to you or not. People like to do it.
I think when they say fun in that sense, they don't necessarily... It's, whenever they say fun, it means...
Don't make excuses for
them. I'm not making excuses, but I mean, this is something I've mentioned before, and especially in comparison to the 3DS and the Wii U. When they mention that, I think they mean kind of in their own quirky Nintendo way. They don't know how to put their stamp on it to make it something unique.
Because this is the thing, is they don't have to.
But they don't have to, but they want to.
Let me put it this way. Wait, Nintendo managed to put their own unique stamp on Netflix, right, on the Wii U, which is to say they didn't fucking release it in Europe.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. But I was actually going to say Netflix Wii U is a good example of that, because it's Netflix. It's very bare bones. It's very un-Nintendo-like. When you compare it to something like their YouTube app, which is kind of a dog and pony show, where you have like, the curtains that open up and stuff like that. Like, to them, that's fun for the people in the room
they
watching.
They don't have to do that. People just want to watch Twitch on their fucking console, so just let them do it.
They don't have to do that, but that is their thing. I mean, it's kind of what we've seen with them throughout the... You know, I guess the same thing with, you know, like, online. Like, you know, they said they weren't social, so they created Miiverse, which is a very interesting social network. It's cool, but it's really only for people who are into Miiverse. And stuff like that, or, you know, like, they're... A lot of the stuff they do is like, okay, we want to take this idea, but we're going to put our stamp on it to make it something different, which isn't necessarily what people want. Sometimes people just want, like you said, sometimes we just want a Twitch app. But to them, the thinking is probably like, what is it for us? Because why would you watch it on the Wii U?
Anyway, to that reasoning, though, the real reason obviously is that the Wii U just can't do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it can't stream. It just doesn't work. It doesn't have like an extra chip or something like the PS4, for example, has that would actually encode the video. But of course, they don't want to give this reasoning, so they're going to come up with a bullshit reason.
Yeah.
Or the other reason is, like I said, they haven't figured out a way to monetize it yet.
Yeah. And I guess the other bit of news, and I think the final bit of news, which isn't really news, Tecmo Koei Europe has changed the name to Koei Tecmo Europe.
The important part up front.
Wait, am I mistaken, or is this OE for one? So are the other branches still Tecmo Koei?
I have no idea.
They're doing a Bandai Namco, which is to say, it sounded good before, and now it sounds really bad.
Well, no, because it's still Tecmo Koei America, so this is just confusing.
I wasn't even joking about the part of Koei being more important.
Oh yeah,
let's be serious here. What is Tecmo doing these days?
They're the Dead or Alive branch, right?
Yep.
And Ninja Gaiden. So I guess technically Ninja Gaiden 3. And Fatal Frame.
Which was terrible.
And Fatal Frame, which is a thing that they're trying to resurrect.
Is Fatal Frame still going?
Yeah.
There's a thing coming out for Wii U.
Oh, really? Yeah.
They're doing a movie at the end of the year. They're doing a new video game. They're doing some book.
But
so,
Ninja Gaiden's down the shitter. No one really cares anymore about Dead or Alive. And it looks like the Koei games are actually what's keeping that company alive.
I don't know. I don't know which half is the good half.
Dynasty Warriors. People still buy Dynasty Warriors games. That's all you need to say.
Yep.
Yeah, and apparently everybody's a fan of Dynasty Warrior now that they're doing a Hyrule Warriors.
I was a Dynasty Warriors fan before all this shirt where when it was cool because of Zelda. Fuck you guys.
You should be happy for them, though. I mean, it means that it exposes it exposes more people to the franchise, even if it literally means that people are only going to buy the Zelda theme once.
I'll be the Dynasty Warriors hipster.
I was cool back when they only did Dynasty Warrior 1.
Exactly.
But yes, I mean, I guess really quickly, since that was brought up, they also announced two new characters. Okay, one new character and one Twilight Princess character for Hyrule Warriors this week, with Agatha from Twilight Princess, who, don't ask me who. I honestly don't remember.
These announcements make me notice something that I have no recollection of characters or story or anything of Twilight Princess.
I'm actually kind of disappointed that it's...
My recollection of Twilight Princess is only that I had a really hard time finishing it because I thought it was really fucking boring and I really didn't like it.
Well, I was going to say, so far this seems to be like a Twilight Princess spiritual successor, because everything's from Twilight Princess. They also announced that Zant's in the game. And Zant, I do remember, because Zant was a really interesting and fun new villain who they're like, oh yeah, we don't really need you for the end of the game, so here's Ganondorf.
I even didn't remember him.
Oh, Zant was pretty cool. He was really cool, but again, I don't even think you get to fight him. It's just like, here's Ganondorf. And the Ganondorf fight is awesome, but it's like, yeah, you really are in the game for the final battle, and that's it.
The really important part is that Impa looks like a total badass in this game. And I'm really excited for that.
Queen Zelda?
Nah, I'm way more into Impa.
Well, you are in a minority, apparently, because according to one of the
She has a giant sword, and she wields it at times with her feet. Awesome is that?
Isn't it the Bigoron sword from Ocarina of Time that she has? I was just... Somebody posted the YouTube stats, and the video with the highest views is the Princess Zelda one. I think it's something like 620,000. The others are around 200,000 apiece. I think people really want to play Zelda. except Ubisoft, because that's really expensive to do women.
Of course it is.
Poor Ubisoft. I think that's it for us this week. Yes, you two have anything else that was newsorific?
Nope.
Not really.
Okay. We will be back next week to talk about USA games. USA. USA. No? Well, next week is the 4th. Well, this Friday is the 4th of July, which is America's Independence Day, which means we get to read Red, White, and Blue, as opposed to any other time of the year when we don't. So, yes. For Daniel, Martin, and myself, this has been Duo, in episode 146.